Hello and welcome to Mountain State Views. I'm your host, Stephen Allen Adams. I'm the state government reporter in West Virginia for Ogden Newspapers. That's the Parkersburg News and Sentinel, the Wheeling Intelligencer and News Register, the Weirton Daily Times, the Intermountain and Elkins, and the Martinsburg Journal. And thank you for joining me today. Thank you for putting up with a little bit of a delay. These aren't going to be like weekly podcast episodes, so I'm not going to be Dan Carlin and put them out every 6 months, but they are going to be put out sporadically, so I appreciate you subscribing and listening. And of course, we had a series of interviews with the top four Republican candidates for governor. We've had a sit-down interview with the top Democratic candidate for governor. And now we're going to kind of switch gears to some other races that I think are interesting and will be competitive, particularly in the primary. So we're going to switch over to the Attorney General's race in West Virginia. The winner will succeed Attorney General Patrick Morrissey, who is running for governor. So we're going to turn to the Attorney General's office, and we've got State Auditor J.B. McCuskey, and we have State Senator and former U.S. Attorney Mike Stewart. There was also Senate Majority Whip Ryan Weld, but he dropped out here relatively recently. So at least as of now in the Republican primary, it's a two-man race, and the last I looked, there wasn't a Democratic pre-candidate filed, but we're approaching the candidate filing season here in January 2024. We'll see who pops up during that time period, but right now it's two people, and with these interviews, I'd like to get to the public policy part of it. There'll be plenty of time to cover mudslinging down the road that's going to happen on both sides. With this interview series, we're focusing on public policy, and my first interview is with Mike Stewart, and I appreciate him being able to join me. As I said, he is a state senator, Republican state senator, representing parts of Kanawha County, Boone, Logan, Lincoln counties. He's a freshman state senator. This is his first four-year term. Before that, though, he was the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of West Virginia, appointed by President Donald Trump. He did that for 4 years. Before that, he was the campaign chair of the Trump campaign in West Virginia in 2016. And he was also chairman of the state Republican Party for a few years. So without further delay, here is our interview with State Senator Mike Stewart. State Senator Mike Stewart, thank you for joining me today. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Now, how's the campaign going so far? Because I know it's early and you have to kind of compete for attention to some extent with U.S. Senate candidates, candidates for governor. And of course, there's other statewide races that are going to be on the ballot. We're going to have everyone actually keeps forgetting we actually have some Supreme Court. Our first intermediate appellate court race will be on the ballot. So there's a lot of races going into 2024. So how's everything going so far?
No, and I think it's hard for ordinary folks to be able to follow all these races across the state. You know, most families are fighting hard just to put food on the table. Inflation skyrocketed. Interest rates are up. The economy, people worry about where we're headed in terms of the economy. And then we ask for folks on top of that to be able to prioritize the election, to be able to sort through all the different candidates, whether it's the candidate for president of the United States, which is going to catch a lot of attention, clearly,
yes. Huge
with
race.
The way things are lining up, and the governor's race, and the U.S. Senate race, and every Board of Public Works race in West Virginia. And so it is, you're right, it's a matter of trying to capture people's attention. I've probably spoken issues more than most folks in the race, in any of the races so far. Why? Because I know that over a period of time, I need to have this conversation with the people of West Virginia.
Right.
If I rely on getting all my advertising and the issues out there for folks to consider in the final 2 weeks or month of the campaign, there's just no way folks are going to be able to sort through all of that. And so we've been doing the best we can to talk issues, to talk voting records, to talk about my record. And I think that's important. We'll continue on that path. But I feel like things are good at this point. And I'm certainly not the deeply funded candidate. I wish we had more in our coffers. But I think we're going to have enough to be able to focus on grassroots. And the other thing I point out to folks, this is about a Republican primary where the
yep.
voter is going to be disproportionately conservative and over on the Democrat side, disproportionately liberal. So my effort right now is making sure that 4 out of 4 voter, and that means folks who have voted 4 times in the past 4 elections,
right, yeah.
know who I am, because we know with fair reliability that if you voted four out of the four past elections, you're most likely to vote again. And I also want to make sure folks know that I'm a proven conservative with my record. And so I think we're trying to build. Our goal is to win on May 14th, not to win today. And we're trying to run a marathon here with the goal of peaking at the right moment. But that's hard to do in the world of politics. And also not knowing all those factors that will come into play over the coming months. We don't know yet. Like, we had no idea on October 6th that the disaster in Israel was going to happen. Yeah. Now, we didn't know 2 years ago that the war in Ukraine was going to happen. We had no idea inflation was going to soar. And so we don't know the challenges we don't know yet. And so we have to be prepared to move forward to adapt to a changing landscape with respect to those things.
Well, you're coming into this race with a pretty impressive resume. You just got elected as a state senator last year. This is your first term representing parts of Kanawha County, Logan County, Boone County, Lincoln. You're a former U.S. attorney for the Southern District of West Virginia, appointed by former President Donald Trump. So you've got extensive experience with criminal and civil matters at the federal level in the Southern District. You're a former state Republican Party chairperson. Chairman. So you've got that experience. You and you kind of did it right before everything happened, before the Republicans took the majority in the legislature and then began starting to take the majorities in the Board of Public Works or whatnot. So you kind of set the groundwork for a lot of that stuff. So talk a little bit about why are you running for this office, which, I mean, it seems like an obvious question because you're also a longtime attorney. So you certainly have a resume that makes you qualified for that job. But why do you want it?
Well, it's been almost 25 years of practicing law at the highest levels, partner at two major law firms, in addition to the things that you stated. I should put you out on the campaign trail because I can tell you that what we're going to do more over the course of this campaign is speak about my record. I think my record speaks for itself in terms of qualification to be the Attorney General of the state of West Virginia. And at no time in our history, you ask the question, why do I want to be Attorney General? I'll say this, public service is a tremendous sacrifice. It's hard on a family. It's hard on a working day-to-day career. But my role for running has been consistent with that long history of public service. I think there's probably no more better role for me to serve in at this point in time than Attorney General. It fits my entire background. Everything from being United States attorney to that long, I'd like to call it a distinguished career, practicing in the private sector. But I'll say this about the role of attorney general. At no time in our history has the role of attorney general been more important. The idea of federal overreach and challenging the federal government on issues like Chevron deference, and I don't want to bore the folks listening to this, but there's a case coming up in the Supreme Court of the United States that will challenge this concept called Chevron deference. Why does it matter? Well, because bodies like the Environmental Protection Agency, the Food and Drug Administration, they just assume powers that they don't have. So at no point in our history is it more important for somebody with my qualifications, my background, as you said, working not only in the criminal area of the law, but also the civil side of the law and in the private sector, representing companies, but also prosecuting bad guys. I bring that whole that whole package that I think is needed by an attorney general today. And as I was saying earlier, that at no time in our history have we needed somebody who can work in the federal courts the way I'm prepared to work on a day-to-day basis. I'm prepared to get to work day one. And I think that resume, the entire collection of experiences I've had in my background, is what's prepared me for that role. And I'm not aspiring to office beyond attorney general. I just want to have folks that say, hey, this is a stepping stone for Stuart. No. I intend to end my career as attorney general. I just believe at this point in time, there's no more important role than attorney general on the ballot. That includes governor. I think the most important role on the ballot today, whether it's for drilling, fracking, mining, Second Amendment rights, personal values, family values, what we see today in what I call the greatest threat to West Virginia are liberals and unelected bureaucrats in Washington, D.C., who seem to want to force down our throats their values. And so I think it's the perfect fit. I have a real background, a real resume. There won't be any learning on the job, but I certainly have additional plans for the office.
Very good. Well, let's get into the criminal versus civil for a moment, because that is the one thing that kind of makes the Attorney General's office unique in West Virginia. It doesn't have criminal authority. It pretty much deals with civil matters. It obviously acts as the state's attorney in cases, especially federal, as you talked about. I think you've advocated for being able to grant some level of criminal powers to the Attorney General's office. I think there's been attempts over the last maybe decade of trying to do that. Legislature's been a little reluctant to do that. They may be more open to it now. Do you still believe that? And if so, I guess what criminal authority do you want to give the office? And what would you like to see the office do in that regards?
Well, let me say, it's not my top priority. My top priority is taking on Washington, making sure we can drill, frack, and mine that beautiful, bountiful energy beneath our feet. I think it's the greatest challenge we face today. And also pushing back to make sure that our Second Amendment rights aren't infringed upon by a federal government assuming powers they don't have. But in terms of criminal authority, I do think it's time for us to consider the opportunity for an attorney general, especially with my background, having been the United States attorney, prosecuted at the very highest levels. Heck, I prosecuted two Supreme Court justices, one Republican, one Democrat. I didn't care about their partisan background.
I covered both of those trials.
Yeah, and critically important. I played a small role in those cases. But I will say I was intimately involved in the charging decisions. I was in that courtroom every day directing my team. And so I played a big role. But we also had, under my leadership, the largest Medicaid fraud case in the history of West Virginia, the largest elder fraud case in the history of West Virginia, more drug raids on a larger scale than any U.S. attorney in the history of West Virginia. I was on the front lines of the opiate scourge. I carry in my pocket, it's in my pocket today, a wallet filled with the faces of the victims of the opiate crisis that were victims while I was U.S. attorney, and I got to know their moms and dads in a terrible way. In fact, I often pray that I didn't know their moms and dads because I got to know them through the chaos and misery of the opioid scourge. But beyond that, I took enough fentanyl off the streets, not me, but my team.
Right,
and,
yeah.
But it took leadership to be able to do this. The idea of saying Stewart hasn't done it himself would be to say to a Super Bowl winning coach, you played no role in winning the Super Bowl. We took enough fentanyl off the streets that could kill over 40 million people in a state of 1.75 million people. So no small accomplishment. But I do think it's time for the Attorney General of the state of West Virginia to be able to look in very limited authority to state agency crime, state agency oversight. That's not happening right now. I'll give you a couple examples. Unemployment fraud in West Virginia during COVID, by all accounts, it's been well acknowledged, it's near $90 million.
Yes.
But in terms of the number of folks who have been prosecuted as a result of unemployment fraud, it's scant. It's very, very small. Very few people have been prosecuted. You could put the numbers on one hand, I believe, of the folks who were prosecuted under that. Also, when you look at PPP funds, when you look at COVID spending during that period of time all across the state of West Virginia, I think there are important issues. Securities fraud, which I have some background in. These are cases that just aren't being prosecuted by county prosecutors. I'm not faulting them in any way for that.
Sure,
they've got a priority of cases they have to take care of, including violent crime, drugs on their streets, and they're doing the best they can. They're undermanned and underfunded for the most part. And so I want to have a strong working, in fact, I want to have a working group of prosecuting attorneys from across the state that regularly advise me every week on things we can do to make sure we work together. My goal here, though, given I understand the grand jury system,
sure,
I understand the way the process should work, and in the areas of Medicaid fraud, perhaps the best example where Medicaid fraud investigations falls under the Attorney General of the state of West Virginia, but once they find a case, it gets shipped out to the counties for prosecution.
Right.
It makes a whole lot more sense for those folks who did the investigation, who have the facts and figures in front of them, to do the prosecutions right here in the capital city.
Awesome. Yeah. So you would say it'd be kind of more of like a backstop for county prosecutors, which I think Attorney General Morrissey has tried to do that before. So I think it's going to take some legislation to do that. But okay, you talked about your priorities, which you did mention.
But not all of them. I think there's some big goals that we have with that office.
I would like you to go into that if you would.
Yeah, so I think it's really important. And we're going to be talking about this certainly over the course of the coming months because I want folks to understand exactly what I plan to do as Attorney General. This isn't something that I'm trying to get a title for. I've had great titles. I think the title of U.S. Attorney is probably a better title than
right,
Attorney General, right? A state party chairman, nominated by President of the United States, confirmed by the United States Senate. Those are pretty cool things. The greatest title, I love those, dad and husband. Truly, those are my favorite titles. I'm running for Attorney General because I think it's important we continue most of the work of Attorney General Morrissey. And what I mean is on those federal overreach cases,
right.
West Virginia versus EPA, a landmark case. That's not only important here in West Virginia, it's important across
nationally,
the country, nationally. So I think it's important that the West Virginia Attorney General continue to be a player on the federal level. In that regard, I'm close friends with the new Attorney General from Kentucky, just elected Russell Coleman. I could call him on my cell phone right now. We could add him to the interview. But I've also become good friends with other attorney generals from around the country, whether it's David Yost in Ohio, Brenna Byrd in Iowa, a number of attorney generals from across the country. So I think one of the most important things I can do is to continue to fight federal overreach, but build broad collaboration with folks I'm already familiar with from across the country when it comes to big issues like drilling, fracking, mining, the Second Amendment, you name it, that pushdown from the federal government. Let me say there's something else important that's percolating that I don't think folks are paying enough attention to, and that's the West Virginia First Foundation.
Yes.
And so I've spent a lot of time. I've studied it. I was in the legislature when we passed that bill. But I think it's incredibly important. This is a one bite at the apple chance we have to make a substantive impact in the opiate scourge and crisis. That crisis, there's no one in West Virginia who hasn't been affected by it. No city, no town. No school, no street, no church, no family. We've all been impacted by the opiate scourge. We have to get to a point that we're moving forward and solving the crisis. To me, there has to be a real sense of urgency.
Indeed.
And I don't want to criticize at all the work that's been done with the First Foundation. But once it was formed, I think there ought to be a sense of urgency today. Not in monthly meetings or bi-monthly meetings. We ought to be focused every single day at getting that foundation up and moving in a 100% entirely transparent format.
Right.
So that cities, towns, and stakeholders understand exactly how the dollars will be distributed. I also think it's important we get the dollars out there. So we've brought dollars into the state of West Virginia.
Right.
But we've got to get them to where it's going to actually work. And thirdly, there has to be accountability. We need to know where are we today. And when we put these dollars in for solutions to the opiate scourge, and that's the goal here, is to try to reduce the impact, the chaos, the misery from the opioid scourge. We need to make sure that we measure those results and we hold folks accountable for the dollars that they get. I think that's the intent of the foundation. I've been impressed with some of the folks appointed to the board thus far. I'd like them to work a little quicker. I've got a sense of urgency. It ought to be 24 hours around the clock because guess what? Today, some folks are going to overdose. And tomorrow, some more folks are going to overdose. Every day of delay is a day of chaos and misery for families across West Virginia. Has to be an absolute sense of urgency to all of that. Thirdly, beyond the First Foundation and hitting federal overreach, I plan to build on what Patrick Morrissey's done as Attorney General, but even to strengthen it, I want a full-service, serious law firm as the Attorney General in the state of West Virginia. Not just federal overreach, where we're focusing on the high-profile issues, but where I have a good civil department, where I have civil rights being prosecuted. I want to make sure, and I think I did this as U.S. Attorney at the Southern District of West Virginia, I took pride in what I called building the best law firm in West Virginia. That's going to be my goal as Attorney General, is to make sure we have the right people in place to be able to represent state agencies across the spectrum but also be a place where we have a vibrant, serious consumer protection division where folks can call us and they know there's going to be action and follow up, and where we follow up with them and work hand in hand to make sure that there's some justice. And then finally, it's things like CPS.
Yes.
And I realize that the Attorney General serves as counsel to every state agency, but it doesn't mean that the Attorney General can't investigate and make sure best practices aren't in place. I can tell you one of the things that was a noteworthy thing for me as U.S. Attorney, despite the opiate scourge, I would receive 3 to 4 times as many emails, texts, and phone calls about CPS and our foster care system as I did the opiate scourge. I think it's a crying shame in West Virginia. I know it's an overwhelming task. And anytime you deal with a family court system, you're probably going to have one winner and one loser. Folks aren't going to be happy about it. But we've got to make sure that we do everything we can. It doesn't mean we're going to prevent every situation like what happened in Sissonville. But we've got to do everything in our power to make sure our focus is on our children and our families and reunifying families who have found a better path. And then I'm going to focus on things like domestic violence, elder fraud, Medicaid fraud, things that I have a lot of experience in. I take very personally issues like domestic violence. I'm going to be on the front lines. I'm going to use the bully pulpit to make sure that we drive down the numbers of domestic violence in West Virginia. As U.S. attorney, I had authority over it and jurisdiction,
right,
but only if it came from out of state or there was a firearm involved. As Attorney General, I plan to go into our schools. I plan to speak to the public. I want to make sure that on both major big issues, whether it's elder fraud, which is one of the most underreported crimes in the country, because most folks have saved a fortune over the course of their lives or tried to. They've saved that nest egg,
yeah,
and it's gone.
And with West Virginia's older population,
absolutely,
it's probably more prevalent than people probably realize here.
Yeah, so those two issues, domestic violence, elder fraud, I think we need an attorney general who understands those subjects. I spent a lot of time working at the attorney general's office on those issues. But from top to bottom, federal overreach, working with the West Virginia First Foundation with a sense of urgency to pat them in the back when they're doing well and kick them in the butt when they're not doing so well. But to make sure we're getting dollars on the street, focus on things like elder fraud and domestic violence, and making sure I build the best law firm we can get. And trust me, I don't plan to be a Republican attorney general.
Sure.
I plan to be the attorney general of the people of West Virginia without consideration for partisan basis. I can be pretty tough. My reputation is being pretty tough. I think drug dealers should be behind bars.
Sure.
But I believe in redemption and second chances for folks who want a second opportunity after going down a path they've made a mistake on.
Let me ask you this, because you covered a whole wide range of things there. This was a question that was posed to me. I actually thought it was really, really interesting, given that obviously there have been attempts over the last couple of years to challenge things in state court, such as the Hope Scholarship, the new public charter school system, things of that nature that obviously had to go through Kanawha County and go through the Kanawha County Circuit Court by law. It's the way that's set up. Now, I think once upon a time, whoever crafted that did so the Attorney General's office or whoever didn't have to go traveling all over the state. But, of course, that was in a different time when we didn't have interstate highways and we didn't have internet and we didn't have all these things that really kind of make it easier for the Attorney General's office to, say, go to a different venue in a different county. And of course, some perceive the Kanawha County Circuit court system to be very liberal. Would you support legislation or a change, perhaps, to where cases against the state can be filed, such as, you know, if it's within a jurisdiction, say Pleasants County, Wood County, Berkeley County, wherever, but having those cases filed in different jurisdictions versus having those cases filed specifically in Kanawha County?
So my answer to that would be devil's in the details, and I try to know the subject matter before I comment on it, but
sure.
I like the idea. And
I thought it was an interesting concept. Yeah.
There's some rules in place with respect to federal jurisdiction, like where you can file
sure.
a federal suit. Maybe we should take a look at those and mirror those. But the idea of this exclusive right of Kanawha County to have all the suits filed here, I think it would be time, given the advances in everything from communications to technology, that, yeah, I don't have any issue taking a look at it. I just want to make sure at the end of the day, we don't disadvantage a party from another party. And I say this all the time, life's not fair, but everybody deserves a level playing field.
Sure.
That was always my philosophy as the U.S. attorney, because if you go through life saying life's not fair, you're going to be a very unhappy person. What we have to do at the end of the day is make sure everybody has a level playing field, that we don't get a determined result, but everybody has the opportunity to fight for the result that they want, and it's on a level playing field. So what I would say in terms of shopping jurisdiction, I want to make sure we're not shopping for results.
Sure, yeah.
That we're shopping for the best location for suits to be filed. When it comes to that issue, I'm glad you bring up this point. Is, I don't know whether you want to call me a technocrat, but I'm a real lawyer.
Sure,
and I take great pride in nearly 25 years of practicing at the highest levels. I've never in my whole life had an ethics complaint filed against me. I always try to follow the rules. I'm not perfect. I've made mistakes. My experience tells me, though, that when you make a mistake, the best way to approach it is make it aware today. Go to your client and say, hey, I need to fix this thing. Because invariably, your mistakes always come back on you. And so, in the case of shopping jurisdiction or jurisdictional changes to where cases have to be made, I want to make sure we do our homework and that we have a well thought out, reasoned approach to how we change it. Because once we change it, you can almost invariably never get it back to where it was before.
Let me ask you this. We've talked about opioids and what you want to do in regards to the office and that sort of thing. Now, you were the lead sponsor and instrumental in passing, I think, at least a couple of bills during the past legislative session to add a number of narcotics and drugs to the schedule list for West Virginia. Obviously, a lot of attention has been paid to opioids, but as we've seen, people in this state have kind of jumped, say, for example, prescription opioids to meth, and then we cracked on prescription opioids. Then we went to meth, shake and bake labs, that sort of thing. We cracked down on that and how you can get that stuff.
Then now it's coming from Mexico. It's much more deadly.
Oh, yeah. But now we jumped to heroin. Then we jumped from heroin to heroin and fentanyl.
Yeah, nobody wants heroin today. They just want fentanyl.
Yeah, now, you know, fentanyl is being laced in practically everything. And then we've talked about, I'm going to get the name wrong. I always do.
Xylazine.
Thank you. And it's often also described as the zombie drug, that sort of thing. I guess in your office, if you're able to do it, how do we kind of not just deal with what we're dealing with right now, which ultimately is as a whole substance use disorder crisis. How do we look ahead and try to be proactive in keeping the next big thing from really kind of latching hold of the people here in West Virginia?
Boy, I love this question. And this is, so I love questions where we can get down into the detail of important subjects like this. Often on a campaign, you're talking about the other person. You're talking about voting records. You're trying to get a little bit of attention for your campaign.
There's going to be plenty of time for that
between
now and May.
For that. But we need more forums where we can talk about the detail of these things. Like I take great pride in really digging into subject matter. We have a real problem across West Virginia with these vape shops that have popped up.
Yeah.
And listen, I support the right of adults with common sense to use their judgment when they go into these vape shops and buy whatever they want to buy. But it has to be consistent with what our communities want. And we have to protect our children from being exposed to illicit drugs, certainly before they're able to make competent decisions.
Sure.
The bill we passed earlier this year, and there were two of them. One was to tighten up the Controlled Substances Act to add xylazine.
Yes.
For your listeners, that their eyes are glazing over when you start talking about all these drugs. This was zombie drug, Trank, on the streets. And I have pictures that could show your listeners what the effects of this drug on someone's arm over time would do. It's unbelievable. You can't even describe it, but effectively it causes the rot of your arm. And as you get high over and over, someone high on that will literally take a knife and just cut off the dead skin until it gets to the point there's basically a bone hanging out. It's devastating. So we were the first state. That bill, we didn't get enough coverage on that. We were the first state in the country to ban xylazine. We weren't the first to go into effect. It went into effect on June 9th. Ohio was actually the first to go into effect. But I think West Virginia deserves a lot of credit. All of our legislators who voted for that bill, and I think it was unanimous, pretty darn close to unanimous, deserve a lot of credit for being on the frontier of making illegal this terrible drug. But the other drug we had really got to the heart of these vape shops.
Yeah.
That bill went into effect on June 9th. And there are things called Delta 8, Delta 10, and Kratom. And nobody needs to know what these things are. Just think of it this way. It's synthetic marijuana.
Right.
And until we passed the bill, you could go to a convenience store at a convenience store that was selling it, not all were selling it, and your 8-year-old, your 10-year-old was able to buy products that looked like Cheetos, looked like breakfast cereal. They were able to buy these products over the counter, which were getting them high. I became aware of this because school system after school system was telling me the number of students who had been suspended over a 30-day period of time. I'll say this. We passed that bill. Passing bills is not enough. You have to enforce the law.
Right, yeah.
We can pass a million bills.
Yeah.
But we have to enforce the law. I'll say that I think the problem today is worse than when we passed the bill.
Okay.
Because I think there, unfortunately, is a lot of confusion amongst law enforcement as to what the law is. And we need to do a better job at making sure law enforcement knows what the law is with respect to these vape shops. These flashing signs, selling intoxicating illegal substances in vape shops, to someone who doesn't have a prescription, to someone who's underage, the intent was that stop.
Right.
But it hasn't stopped. And so I think one of the priorities moving forward, I'm certainly going to be looking at it in this legislative session, but I'm also going to be encouraging law enforcement and those folks responsible for the enforcement of that bill to get more aggressive. Nobody wants to stop anybody from selling a legitimate substance that's been passed that fits with public policy. But these vape shops with these flashing lights in residential communities, I haven't met a mom or dad or a community leader yet that loves these things. They've become a nuisance across West Virginia. And there are laws in place that deal with this. We need to get serious, though, about the enforcement side. And so these are issues that, as Attorney General, I'm really going to be driving on these issues. I think it's important we have an Attorney General in tune with moms and dads, grandmas, grandpas, brothers and sisters that deal with the challenge of the substance abuse disorder syndrome across our state. And as much as federal overreach is my top priority, it's pretty hard for anybody who knows me to know my passion on this issue, to not think that, well, passion number one is going to be federal overreach, but overriding everything. We'll be trying to work with our families to strengthen our families and get these substances away from them.
Very good. Well, I think we're going to go ahead and leave it right there because we hit the 30-minute mark. But State Senator Mike Stewart, thank you for joining me.
And thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it. I'd love to come back. And there's a lot of issues we didn't have a chance to touch. But important race. I just want folks to tune in and know who's running for Attorney General. And I'll always be available 24/7, 365 to everyone. And you can learn more about my campaign by going to MakeWVGreatAgain.com. MakeWVGreatAgain.com. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Special thanks to State Senator Mike Stewart for sitting down with me. I thought that was a pretty good conversation. Working on scheduling for State Auditor J.B. McCuskey now. So hopefully we'll get him on next and see what he has to say about the sort of things he wants to do as Attorney General. Should be very interesting. Thank you once again for listening to Mountain State Views. I've been your host, Stephen Allen Adams. We will see you here hopefully soon with the next installment in this series on the Attorney General's race. Special thanks to Ogden Newspapers for allowing me to be able to do this podcast. The music that we open and end the show with is from Jerks. It's called I Don't Care. And until next time, enjoy the view.